Well, good morning again. Have any of you done the Nehemiah retreats at Unity Village? Me neither. I've wanted to. The Nehemiah retreats, that's much better, thank you very much, are put on by Unity Village, and people come together and do work there. They do maintenance kinds of things outside and inside, and I've never seen a request for help. You know, I would like to do that sometime. I have been told that they have more than enough people that want to come and do those retreats, that they never have to advertise, but they're called Nehemiah retreats. We see in the path, if you get that, you see where they broadcast, or they say there was a Nehemiah retreat and they accomplished this or that, or, you know, these things that they had done. So it's a wonderful thing. When there are volunteers that do it, but they get free room and board while they're there. So it's always a great opportunity. There would be a great opportunity to go and be on the grounds and do some sacred service. Now, I don't know about you, but I am not a Bible scholar by any means, and so when I heard this term, Nehemiah retreat, somehow I assumed that Nehemiah meant service. You know, he had something to do with service. Pretty logical. But that may not be the focus of his message. I learned in some reading that I did that Nehemiah really boils down to asking for help. Asking for help. Is that hard for anybody else besides me to ask for help? Yeah. Yes. I am better about it than I used to be, but asking for help often is really hard. People tell me all the time, I hate to ask for help. I hate to. And through the years I have gotten better, because it seems like the universe just, you know, kind of kicks a little harder if I can do this, you know, then yeah, boom. Maybe I do need some help. So I have gotten better about asking for help. Why do we not want to ask for help? Have you? Ego, yes, ma'am, for sure. I think that, well, I have some theories. I have no idea if it's right or wrong. And it could be that individually we have our own reasons for not wanting to ask for help. One is we may not want to, as she said, ego. We may not want to appear weak or ineffectual or unable to do whatever it is that we're about to do. We don't want to look bad in front of other people. That could be one reason. It could be that maybe whoever we ask might say no. It's one thing to say, honey, would you go get me a sandwich? And honey says no. But if it's a big thing and you ask and somebody says no, it can be, maybe you just don't want to open yourself up for that. So that could be it. It might be that you don't want to feel obligated. If you ask for help, then now you owe them, perhaps. Lots of reasons why we might not want to ask for help. I think that times have changed. I don't think it used to be quite so hard to ask for help. That's my opinion only. But if I when I think back to other times, I know that even in the days of my grandmother, who quilts, they would have quilting bees, and so women would come and work together to create a quilt. Beautiful work. And, of course, the quilt got done much faster than if one person was doing it by themselves. In the agricultural times, it was pretty common, I think, for neighbors to get together and do a barn raising. You know, one person would not be able very easily to build a barn, but the whole community coming together and making it kind of a festival was pretty common. So in the other, in earlier times, I think that this asking for help might have been more common. It might have been more natural. Today, we are fiercely independent. Families are scattered, you know, all over the place. I have moved back home, as you well know, and And families do come together to help out, sometimes even without even being asked. When I had moving day from Jefferson, I had several stages, if you recall, but the stage where I was moving from Jeff City into the rental house, and the movers were there, and here comes my sister and my niece, and they start, roll up their sleeves and start unpacking and cleaning, and it was so wonderful. So families do that for each other, but it isn't as common for families to all be in the same area anymore. And like I said, we're independent. Our society seems to value and put a lot of weight on being independent. I don't need anybody. I can do this. I mentioned Nehemiah, so I wanted to let you know more about this guy, Nehemiah. Why did they name a retreat after him, and what does this have to do with asking for help? Nehemiah, there's the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament. And he was a slave. This apparently was written, they say, around 460 BCE. And he was a Jewish cupbearer to the king of Persia at that time. So we're not going to read the whole book here, but it starts off in chapter 1 saying, "The words of Nehemiah, son of Halakiah. In the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital, one of my brothers, Hanani, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them about the Jews that survived, those who had escaped the captivity, and about Jerusalem. They replied, 'The survivors there in the province who escaped captivity are in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been destroyed by fire.'" You might remember that Jerusalem is very sacred to the Jews. They would, historically, Jews from wherever would try to make an annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem for Passover. So it was a big deal for their wall to be crumbling and so forth. And he continues. He says, "When I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, fasting and praying before the God of heaven. I said, 'O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant.'" And he goes on and he in his prayer talking to God, ending with, again, "O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants, the Jews, who delight in revering your name. Give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man," being the king. So Nehemiah took his woes to God, prayed to God to be with him, to hear his pleas, to give success to him. So then it goes on in chapter 2. It says, "At the time I was cupbearer to the king. And in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of the king, when wine was served him, I carried the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. So the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad since you are not sick? This can only be sadness of the heart.' Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my ancestors' graves, lies waste and its gates have been destroyed by fire?' Then the king said to me, 'What do you request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven. Then I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor with you, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my ancestors' graves, so that I may rebuild it.'" Here's this Jewish man who is a slave to the king. He's a cupbearer. He's downhearted. He's weeping. He's mourning because of the state of his city. Many people might have given up. Oh, what can I do? But he prayed to God, asked for success. He went before the king, and the king said, "What do you want? What is your request?" So he told him. He said, "Well, I would like to have papers that you can send with me. I can go to Judah, and I would like to have resources." So the king gave him all that, gave him letters so that he could have the trees, the timber that he needed to have the wall rebuilt and all of that. And the book of Nehemiah goes into a great deal of detail about who all he invited to participate in this rebuilding of the wall. It wasn't just him, and he didn't like hire somebody to go fix the wall. He inspired the Jews to come together to fulfill this work. There were problems, there were some bumps in the road, but his enemies, it's reported, his enemies saw that he had God's approval, and they kind of fell away by the wayside. He was successful. The wall was built, and it was amazing. I wonder what made him ask the king. He, being a devout Jew, probably regularly talked to God. He took his problems, his celebrations, all that to God. But something made him ask the king. One of the things I was reading said that there are some times to ask. When do you ask? And again, if it's something really simple like, would you go get me this or would you go get me that? That isn't really what we're talking about. We're talking about when it's something big. So the first criteria is when the problem is bigger than us. That would be a time to ask. Ask for help. Certainly, the walls falling down in Jerusalem was a big deal. It was something that a slave could not have addressed on his own. Raising a barn, we've already talked about, that would be pretty hard to do for one person. Making a quilt. My mom used to quilt, and my grandmother. And so I have a quilt that's been in progress for years now. That takes a long time when you do it by yourself. So when it is a bigger thing than is easy or maybe even possible for one person, that's when to ask. That's one time. Another time to ask is kind of hinges on this assumption that we are in connection with the Creator, that we have already spoken to God, we have already taken these things to God, and then we are willing to listen. We are willing to receive. So the second time to ask is when you have already asked God, when you already told God about this. Because I am convinced that Nehemiah opened himself up to receive the guidance, the inspiration, the motivation to do what he did after he had taken it to God. So when it's a really big problem, when you've already taken it to God. And the third is when we're willing to do our part. Nehemiah did not say, "I need letters and materials, and then send these people out to do it." No, he took the people. He was willing to do his part. Who knows what our fifth basic principle is? Action. Walk the talk. That's exactly right. Our fifth basic principle, we don't have a lot of stuff that we remember in Unity. We have five basic principles. And the fifth one is that it isn't enough to know these truths. There's just one God, that we are created by God, that the way we think has a direct impact on our lives, and prayer and meditation is our connection to God. Those are the first four. The fifth is use these principles to live your life. Walk the talk. So this last one is be willing to take action, to move your feet. What happens? When there is a big something to do perhaps, or some situation that seems overwhelming and too much, when it has been completed, whatever that means, it's done, and it is done more often, more effectively, but certainly more quickly than if we were trying to do it by ourselves. So the end product to the problem, the solution, or the vision or the dream gets completed, you know, when we do this, when we ask for help from God and then from others as guided, as inspired. So it gets completed. And what else happens? We feel good. When some project, well, you saw me when I held up the friendship book. That's been, I am so excited about that friendship book. It feels really good to have a big project finished. You know? And whether it's the walls of Jerusalem or a new barn or whatever it is in our lives that we have asked for help with and completed, it feels really good to have that. And then the third thing that happens, maybe a little more subtle. We might not realize it, but when we ask others for help, we are inviting them into a flow. And they have an opportunity to give. The Nehemiah retreat, you know, Unity Village asks people, come and help us. And people love it so much, apparently, that they never have to advertise for it. But there is a wonderful feeling when we get to help somebody. Think back to a time when you were asked for help and you did it. Didn't it feel good? I had a huge, as I mentioned, the universe giving me 2x4s sometimes. In December of 2007, I fell and I broke both of the bones that go down into my left ankle. So I had to have surgery, and I had to be off my feet, off my foot, for almost 3 months, so I couldn't drive, and I did get a walker, but it was, you know, I mean, slow process, push, hop, you know, and certainly couldn't drive. I had to ask for help. People were amazing, and they were wonderful. I was serving as the associate minister down at First Unity at the time. One couple, Paul and Judy, Karen knows them, lived close to the church, but they would drive over to my house in Fenton, a good 25 minutes probably, pick me up and drive me back to church so that I could attend church on Sundays. They did that every Sunday for probably 2 months. People would come and either bring me groceries or take me to the grocery store. So that I could ride, I got to ride one of those little scooters, you know, that was me, so that I could get groceries. And it was amazing. And what I discovered was, real quickly, I got over this feeling of, I don't know, almost like a guilt kind of thing. Do you ever feel that way when somebody does something for you? But I got over that because I could see that they were happy. They were happy to be able to do something. And I thought back to when I've been able to help somebody. So there is the possibility when we ask for help that, yes, we're going to get something done. We are going to get something done. And we're going to feel good about it. But so are the people we've asked for help. When I looked up Nehemiah in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, it was a long passage. I didn't want to bring all that, but I did find a sentence that I think is really good. It says, the prophet Nehemiah is the faithful, persistent one within us that believes in this divine possibility for man. we use metaphysics a lot here, and so what we know then is that we each have a Nehemiah. We each have a part of us that believes that all things are possible. We each have a Nehemiah that when connected with God, opens the way, opens the path for accomplishing amazing good. In our lives, stuff happens. And sometimes the stuff is really hard and very difficult to deal with. So I would invite you, the next time something really big happens, whether it's a big job to do or some big opportunity that you're considering, or it's some challenge to be dealt with, I would encourage you to remember that Nehemiah within you. And when you do that, take the time to go into prayer, to then be open, willing, and receptive, so that as people come into your space, you may well be guided to ask for the help that you want and you need. And so it is. Let's take a moment now, as we do each week, to practice this communion with Spirit. So I invite you to get comfortable in your seats. You may want to close your outer eyes. And to help relaxation, take a deep breath in and release. If and as you will continue breathing slowly and deeply, you will be able to feel your body respond by relaxing and letting go. We breathe. We become still. Still in the outer and still in the inner. We take a listening kind of posture. Sometimes I say, we listen for the space between the in-breath and the out-breath. Breathe in, listen. Breathe out, listen. It is when we are still and quiet and listening that we become aligned with that divine that is within us. We become open and receptive. We become the willing vessels and channels that we intend. This quiet is a time for nourishment for us. It is a time of reconnection. When we do this on a regular basis, we become calm. We feel the peace that is our natural state. We feel the love that is our natural state. And we begin to be that in expression. We are much less likely to be drawn into the whirlwind of the outer world. In this center, in this place of peace and love, in this silence, we are the light of the world. We are one with our Creator. We are one with each other. It is here in this space of oneness. That we draw to us that which we need, that which we want, sometimes without even having to speak words. We become like the light that we talk about. We become magnets for peace, for love, because that is what we are expressing. And so today, as we do each week, let us set aside some time in the silence, some moments of stillness in our bodies, in our minds, to just pause, reflect on oneness, our Creator, in the silence. And as we bring our attention back into this time, into this room, sometimes we feel something different. Sometimes we feel nothing has changed, but I assure you that it has. Deep within, every time we do this, every time we still ourselves, we are strengthening that connection, strengthening the bond, becoming more and more who and what we are in truth. An outward expression of the Creator. We are grateful, grateful for this community where we can come and be with like-minded people to support each other. We are grateful for this awareness, most especially, of the ever-present, unchanging presence of God in us, always, with us, always. We are grateful for all the many blessings that we enjoy, and we are grateful for all the blessings that are still coming to us as we ask.